no helicopters have been procured for me to go to golf course. Thank you.
I've never said he wasn't a great politician. I'm just saying he's a off.
He's listening to you.
How'd you play out there today?
Well, I found the conditions challenging, mostly because there's no grass on the golf course, but there never has been.
I'm thinking about the swag bag, and I have high hopes for the swag bag.
When you got three crevices on the green, your course is trash.
What's happening, folks? Welcome back to the Beltway Golfer Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Dixon. This is episode 85. Recording this intro on Thursday, August 1st. Actually recorded the podcast conversation with our guest, Jefferson Burgess, a couple weeks ago before I headed up north for some family vacation up in the Pine Tree State of Maine. Played some golf on the way up, played some golf up there, but some nice R&R. But finally got a chance to come back here and get this podcast out. Enjoyed sitting down with Jefferson, who is the founder and publisher of Bow Birdie Magazine, which is all about golf and really travel and some other stuff that he talks about, but mainly golf in the Shenandoah Valley, which encompasses a lot more golf courses than I think I necessarily realized until I looked at his directory in the magazine. He just came out with a second issue just last month or the month before. But lots to talk about. You know, we talked a lot about some Shenandoah Valley courses, a lot that I've played, some that I haven't, the mechanics of getting a magazine together. But go find Bow Birdie on social media, website bowbirdie.com. If you're in really any golf course pro shop in the Shenandoah Valley, you can probably see the magazine on a stand there. You can probably grab one in a pro shop at just about any golf course in the Shenandoah Valley region. Hope you enjoyed the conversation that we had as much as I did. Right now in the DC area, this is competition season. I was just out at Congressional Country Club yesterday for the second round of the 48th playing of the Junior PGA Championship, which is the second of eight PGA of America events that Congressional's hosting, which will culminate with the 2036 Ryder Cup. But there's a lot of local players, both on the boys and girls side, that I wanted to check out, one of which, because I'm going to get to some of these state events that just happened there the last couple months, but Logan Riley, who's headed to Auburn, he's in the event, and he just swept the Virginia State Amateur and the State Open of Virginia and is in the hunt as the time of this recording of the Junior PGA Championship. He's, I believe, just finished up. Maybe he's got another year at Bishop O'Connell in Arlington, Virginia, and definitely a name to watch. But a lot of competitions going on right now. I saw Laura Greenleaf won the Virginia Women's Amateur. Billy Peel just won the Maryland Mid Amateur. Alex Hoffman won. What did he win? He won the Maryland Open. This is that time of year. There's competitions kind of going on everywhere, junior, senior, mid-am, amateur, you name it. But the July is the time. It's almost hard to keep track of it all. I'm going to put out a newsletter in the next week or so and maybe do a recap of a lot of the results. So be sure to subscribe to the newsletter at bellwaygolfer.com. Let's jump into the podcast here again. This is episode 85, and it is with Jefferson Burgess, founder and publisher of Bow Birdie Magazine about golf in the Shenandoah Valley. Enjoy.
We're sitting out here at Capen. I don't even know what the appropriate title of Capen Springs and Farms, Capen Springs Resort. What is the official? We're overlooking the golf course, which I haven't played yet, but we're going to play after this interview. We're up in an old, I don't know what you'd call this pavilion that we're in.
I know one thing. We're going to be eating lunch in the pavilion in about 2 hours. I'm very excited. I've done that before. They do specials like rotisserie chicken and different things. They make their own homemade pies. Typically, it has ice cream on it in the summer. It's supposed to be close to 100 degrees today, so that ice cream on homemade pie is sounding pretty good.
So we'll get into Capen Springs and where we're at in a second. But so I'm sitting here with Jefferson Burgess. You are the founder and publisher and editor of Bow Birdie Magazine, which is a magazine dedicated to golf in the Shenandoah Valley, correct?
Yeah,
Yeah. Would you like to describe it a different way?
I'll go into a little more detail.
Sure.
So I'm 60 years old. I retired from my real job just 2 years ago, right after COVID. It just seemed like the right time to leave. I worked in marketing and sales for a retirement community that was a Mennonite community, incredible, in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And what's interesting is one thing, the Mennonites forced me to learn how to play golf when I started working there, which is funny because people don't think of Mennonites as golfers, but in that community, it was a very important part.
Sure.
For the people that live there and future people who would live there. So they thought it would be nice when I took the marketing on job to learn how to play golf.
Yeah.
So here I am, 40 years old, and I was way more into basketball and other things, canoeing, mountain biking. But I was game for it, so I learned how to play. And then I got the idea to do a magazine. It was going to be called Bogeys and Birdies. And I was going to do it while I was working there at that community. But I got promoted. And when you get promoted, you know what that really means. It's just you're going to work a whole lot more and not get paid much more. But
right.
That was okay. But I had to dust off the magazine years later because it was on hold. The first issue I started on that never went out to the public, but that I printed and had a mock-up of was in 2005.
Oh, wow. That long ago.
Okay. Yeah. And then I when I retired, I decided, hey, I'll take a look at that again. I need something to do at 60 years of age or 58, I think, when I retired. I was like, I'm a little too young. COVID kind of got me to reevaluate and to retire. But now I need to do something that has relevance or purpose in my life. And I love storytelling. I love photography. I love the Shenandoah Valley. I love food and dogs. I love golf. But I love people. And so I kind of cheated. And I started a magazine that I call a golf magazine. But the reality is it's a lifestyle golf magazine.
Right.
So it can be about anything I feel like. So if you follow the social media or if you see the magazine, like here's a turn to a page of a guy that serves ice cream. Well, he doesn't golf. He actually is an incredible guitar player. In fact, he broke out his guitar when I'm there and started singing to my wife and I as he's serving ice cream. But to me, that's a story I'm going to put in Bo Verde.
It's almost like a Shenandoah Valley travel magazine with golf as the main character.
Yeah, somebody told me that Bo Verde was a travel and tourism magazine disguised as a food journal, hiding under the pretense that it's a golf magazine. And maybe it is,
sure.
But it doesn't matter, right?
Right.
50% of our readers are not golfers. On social media, 50% of our followers are women. So it's an interesting demographic, and we've got a lot of young. In fact, you'll see new versions coming out. We'll focus more on the future of golf. But I wanted to make sure in the first few issues I was capturing some of the courses that I'm worried about maybe closing or maybe the end of something. But when I listen to Beltway, a golfer, and recently I was trying to do my homework, even though I'm used to on the other side of this, I was checking Alex out, and it was exciting to hear about the future of golf in regards to the people that know.
Sure.
And I don't have a huge golf knowledge. I just have a passion for golf, but I was very impressed by what you're doing, and I think it really needs to be done.
Well, I appreciate that very much. You just kind of touched on it. It was originally called Bogeys and Birdies, but now the magazine, since launch, you've done two issues so far, is called Bo Birdie.
Yeah.
Is there anything more to just combining the two words, Bogey and Birdie?
There actually is. That's a good question. And let me back up just a hair.
Sure.
So when I was going to do the magazine in 2005, I had a good friend that owned a printing press and was already doing magazines in the Shenandoah Valley. And it was going to be a print magazine that came out every month.
Okay.
Now, fast forward to 2022 from 2005, the world changed completely. In fact, a lot of print magazines either went out of business or stopped printing and just went digital. And then actually started coming back around to doing print again, but print was seen as a niche market and something that people didn't throw away. In the old days, magazines were like newspapers. You read them and you threw them away. Now, magazines are very much seen as a coffee book table or something, coffee table book.
Sure.
Or something that you hang on to. So I had to revisit my whole idea of doing a magazine. So the Bo Birdie magazine is really a digital magazine that has a website. That's really the vortex.
Yeah.
And that's changed almost every day. The print magazine is a directory that right now comes out once a year. So a little different. We also have Instagram and Facebook and YouTube, LinkedIn. And so there's a lot of different vehicles. And so what you're going to find out quickly in this interview is I am the bottleneck of Bo Burry. I'm the problem because I don't understand algorithms and social media and artificial intelligence. I don't have the education or the understanding or experience that I probably should have to be able to catch up and keep up with the future. But it has changed greatly. Going back to the name, so I wanted to invent a word. All the marketing experience I've had, I realized, especially in golf, where there's a billion golf companies and almost every word in golf is already trademarked or used somewhere, I wanted to invent a word that was my own word that I could copyright and protect. But also, I wanted it to be easy to say. I have a degree in psychology, and I understand that that means a lot. So the letter B, is a good letter. Also, the word bogey is probably the worst or one of the worst words a golfer can hear, except for shank. And then the word birdie is one of the best words the golfer can hear, except hole-in-one or something.
Okay.
So I was thinking, let's just do a little of the bad word and a lot of the good word, right? So bo, you just get a little bit of bogey, and then birdie, yeah, you get all of it. So bo birdie
sure.
Takes that whole spectrum of golf, from the bad to all the good. And so that's why I came up with the name.
That's interesting. I mean, so that's more like from a marketing and intellectual property standpoint, where I was thinking maybe this was just like you and your buddies is what you call, you know, getting on a green and three putting or something for bogey. But
now that you said that, I am a pretty golfer because that's my life. Free putting, I'm pretty good at it.
Oh, that's wild. So why, I imagine you've got a lot of history in the Shenandoah Valley. You live in the Shenandoah Valley. What, you know, why did you think that this was necessary? What was missing in the Shenandoah Valley? Was nobody covering golf in this region? What's your motivation?
So that's a good point. And the motivation was probably self-focus on having a job that was about all my interests or passions.
Sure.
Doing something that I really loved. But that being said, the Valley did have a void. There were a lot of interesting places, and I didn't feel that anybody was capturing the stories. A lot of the friends I have that golf were sharing their experiences, including where we are today. And I cheated a little bit because the Valley, to me, includes this course and Wintergreen and Homestead. Like, I decided that Shenandoah Valley is Harper's Ferry down the road on sale. I don't know if it is or isn't, but in my mind, that's where it is. And we're expanding. We do OB articles. There's a course in Franklin, West Virginia that's definitely not in the Shenandoah Valley, but I embrace and consider it part of the Bo Burry courses. So I think to answer your question, Alex, about was there a void? Yes, I think there was. And I saw that most golf magazines were about instruction and about pro players and just reviewing golf courses. I don't do either of those three. Mine is really capturing the stories of the people and the places and the history and the quirkiness. So hopefully I'm filling a void and not competing as much as just kind of filling in the areas that other people chose not to do.
Did any, you know, I love the magazine. And I love that you did. I love the concept. I've had aspirations of something similar myself, so I absolutely love it. However, you said you started in 2005, but the first issue came out in 2023. A lot of people would say in 2023, starting a new print magazine is crazy.
Yeah.
Did people tell you that?
Yeah. So there was a magazine done in the Shenandoah Valley called A Mountain Career. Incredible. Hey, Andrew and Jeff, by the way. An incredible magazine. So I went to the printer of this magazine. He does 80 different college magazines, by the way, and super neat guy. I won't say his name, but I contacted him and I said, would you meet with me and talk about the world of magazines? And he goes, sure, but I just want you to know it's going to fail. And I said, okay. I was with you. So we met for 2 or 3 hours, and he gave me a tour of his printing press and everything. And in the end, he says, you know what? This is probably going to work. I think it's going to work. And he was the golfer, by the way. I said, well, why did you do a reverse in your your feelings about the magazine. He goes, well, the only magazines that work now are niche markets. And he says, and you picked a demographic that loves their game. Golfers are fanatics. They'll spend money. They have money. You pick the niche that is probably going to work. He said, the world's different now. The magazines work differently. In fact, he told me one of the largest universities in the state of Virginia, he does their magazine, and they called him. He said, a few weeks ago, this university called me and said, we don't want any more print magazines. We're just going digital. And he said, okay. And he said, a few weeks later, they called him back and said, we need a print magazine. Then he explained that not everybody's ready for digital, or not everybody wants digital. And so with the background in psychology, I did a lot of studying to figure out why people would want something on their phone versus in print versus on a website. And so hopefully I'm capturing all of that, but it's changing so fast, Alex. I'm sure you've seen this, that the world just keeps on changing. Even the amount of seconds, I go to classes and do a lot of studying and have some support with different experts. But what they're showing is every month or two, the amount of seconds someone is willing to read something, it's shortening. That's a little alarming that you have to be constantly looking at your posts, looking at your videos, looking at your articles, and making sure that you're going to capture that viewer's attention.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of us see that firsthand. You know, I see that myself. You know, again, I still subscribe to a lot of magazines. I love when whatever magazine I'm subscribed to shows up in the mail. I love it.
Right.
However, I've got a short attention span like so many other people. And I find myself scrolling through whatever, Instagram reels or YouTube shorts at a level that I have to take a step back and be like, oh my gosh, the way the technology works, it's just never ending and it just commands your attention. And you find one thing funny and you go to the next thing and the next thing's interesting and blah, 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 blah. And it's almost like whether it's print magazines or books, or it's almost like, how can it compete with this, our shortening attention spans?
Yeah. I think that's well said. And so going back to Alex for a second, listening to your podcast, and I'm very hyper. I'm sure you've already caught on that I have ADHD. I'm extremely hyperpertinent. My attention span is very short. But I got through his podcast without having to fast forward or which is unusual. So it shows whatever you're doing is working. But I felt like there were conversations. It was interesting. As I was listening, I almost felt like I was in on the conversation versus just somehow listening to people quote off facts or figures or stats.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's whatever you're doing, it's got to be compelling and good.
Right.
Or else you're going to lose people fast.
Yes.
Let's talk. I want to get into kind of the mechanics of putting out a magazine, but let's start first with some of the golf. You know, let's start here. You know, we're at Cape and Springs. I've heard about this place for a long time. Today is the first time I've ever stepped foot on the property. And there are some folks that listen to this podcast. There's actually a gentleman who's been on the podcast a couple of years ago. He runs an outfit called Sugarloaf Social Club named Ian Gilley. And they have got they've actually have this little hidden gem map on their website, and he posts a lot on social media, and he's posted a lot about this course because he loves it here. And he was maybe one of the first people to kind of shine a light on it for me. I think I'd heard of it, but didn't know much about it. Anyway, today's the first time I'm here. And the route, we met Jonathan, with the proprietor, and he said, did you come in off 66, off 81 down the dirt road? And I said, yes, I did. And he goes, did you get did you think you were lost? I said, absolutely. If without GPS, I'd have been like, there's no way this is correct. You're down this windy road for a couple miles in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of forest, no buildings, no houses, no nothing, no road signs, gravel road. And then the woods just kind of open up and you're in this little paradise. It's kind of incredible.
Yes.
And we're going to play the golf course after this. But this place is remarkable. What else can you tell us about Cape and Springs?
Okay. And I apologize, by the way, doing a video.
No worries.
I need some footage. And this is, so I just taped a little bit. I've got to turn it off now, but I do want you to know what I'm doing and why. Okay, so your question was about Capen.
Just tell us some more. You have a lot of experience here. You know Jonathan well. You've played here a bunch. Today's my first time here. And I think this is a great example. In your issue two, you do an article about Capen Springs.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about a few of the courses that you highlight in your magazines in the Shenandoah Valley. Let's start here. Just tell us why you love it here.
And so you and I were talking earlier off the camera. I think about how you meet people and how you interact in a relationship. And I feel very strongly with Alex that he's got the same idea as I do, that relationships have to go both ways. So if somebody does something for you, you don't just keep on taking, you give and take. And that's something that I feel here at Capen Springs is so interesting, because it seems like all these people that come here connect somehow, and it continues. And so meeting Jonathan years ago, it's interesting how much Capen Springs comes into conversations when I'm in different states and different areas all over. It's just one of those special places. And Jonathan could share with you in more detail about his grandparents and them bottling the water and them going all the way to the Supreme Court to prove that their water actually was medically, approved, and all these funny little stories. But what you notice right away, as Alex said, when you get here, it's in the middle of nowhere. But it's only really about 45 minutes from Harrisonburg or Winchester or different, towns that are fairly populated. But when you look around here, today when we play golf, every hole is like 360 degrees of mountain views.
Right.
It's just a beautiful course. And in the middle of the golf course, there is like a 1940s Coke machine or cooler, that you used to see at the gas station, full of ice. And on one side is apple juice cans. On the other side is the ginger ale. And so Jonathan pulled me up. The first time I'm playing the course with him, we pull up to that Coca-Cola vending machine. It's free, by the way. And we open it up, and he takes a cup out, and he pours half of the drink in the cup, and the other half and wishes it around, and then puts it back in the can. I go, Jonathan, what are you doing? And Jonathan said, this is what we all do. I learned this from my grandparents, but as little kids, when we come here, we take half of the apple juice or apple cider and half of the ginger ale, mix them together, and make our own drink. And so I do this in honor of my grandparents and, my childhood memories. So I do that now. Like every time I'm here, I pass that along. But this course is crazy. Like when you go into the locker room, they have the scorecards and the pencil, and then they have the rules. And one of the rules is if you hit it behind a tree or in a rock or somewhere, you can move the ball, and there's no penalty. And I was thinking, that's interesting. Course rule, no penalty for moving the ball around. But they want you to be relaxed and enjoy it here, so they took away some of the rules that irritate people. And when you play on this course, there's not a lot of level ground, you'll see.
Yeah, I can see that right now, yeah.
But it's fair. The course feels very, very fair. Yeah, it's a special place. I don't want to share too much.
There's a lot of history here, though, too. I mean, this place has been open since the 1920s, 1930s.
In fact, Alex and I were in the main hotel earlier, and we're looking on the wall, and it lists all these families. And I would guess 90 to 95% of those families have been coming here for over 50 years. I mean, they just it's family tradition.
I'm guessing that certainly not all of them, but a lot of the courses in the Shenandoah Valley, because, you're removed from suburban sprawl and the development that being close to an urban center comes along with it, is a lot of the places that are in your brilliant directory of courses along the Shenandoah Valley, you have this feeling of, being untouched by time a little bit.
Yeah, and, that's a good comment.
And because I know because the other place I want to talk to you, because this place certainly feels like that, and it kind of brings you back to an earlier time. But another one that just unfortunately recently closed that you do an article with in issue one, that shame on me, I'd heard about and never got a chance to play, Swannanoa, which from what I understand is a similar vibe.
Yeah, and it's a completely different similar vibe, if that makes sense. So Swannanoa was all about not having to wear a shirt when you play, having seven people putting at the same time, bringing your dog. It was just like anything goes. It's like a frat party forth on top of Afton Mountain. Family, very, very special. And it was sad that they've sold that land now. Several of the members of the family passed away that were overseeing that course. This course is just off that it's not a frat party at all. In fact, there's strict here about rules about drinking and different things. But it's got that same vibe of untouched, hasn't sure. changed. And what's untouched is special because you're playing the same course that someone might have played, gee whiz, 40, 50 years ago.
Right.
Now, that being said, Ballyhack, Devil's Knob, gee whiz, there's a lot of really good courses in the Shenandoah Valley that are very modern, very right. up-to-date in feel and how they're designed. And there's something for everybody. And my guess is you've played several of the courses in the Valley. If you haven't, I'm going to force you to, by the way, in the next 3 years.
I've certainly played some, but again, he's got a really cool directory in both issues, which breaks down kind of the entire Valley
right.
from essentially, like you said, Roanoke to Harper's Ferry. Right. And you've got it broken down into regions. So region one being the most north, Jefferson County and Berkeley County. All the way down to Roanoke. And how many total courses do you have listed here?
There's about 50. There's a few I'm not allowed to put in the magazine that are
really?
Featured courses that I've sworn an oath that I won't share with people. And there's a few that I'm not allowed to give out contact information because they're private courses. But you've got the Homestead. I mean, I'm just trying to think of courses you've probably played. There's some world-class, or at least pretty close to it, Ballyhack and Homestead and Devil's Knob. Some of these are courses that people will travel several states, if not several countries away, to come play.
Sure, but as I go through the regions, I mean, like region one, the most north, there's six looks like Stonebridge is temporarily closed. I've only played one. I've played Locust Hill right. in Charlestown. You know, region two, going a little further south, you have five, which includes Cape and Springs here and Millwood Country Club, is Millwood private? No, what am I thinking?
Yeah.
It is private, yeah. I have never been there, but I've heard that place is really cool. The only one I've played two. In Region 2 is Rock Harbor I've played, and the little executive course at Appleland Sports Center, which is really cool. Region 3 has got Blue Ridge Shadows, Front Royal, Sly Fox, Bowling Green, Shenandoah Valley. I think I've played all of those. But as you get further south, Region 4, Shenvalee. We can talk about Shenvalee. Yeah. That's a cool place. Yeah. Bryce and okay, and Caverns Country Club, which is really cool. Played those.
Best first hole probably in the state of Virginia.
Is which one?
Luray Caverns.
The Caverns Country Club. Yeah, and talk about a cool clubhouse, too.
Right? You're going back to 1970s. It's like a pizza hut. yes. But the first hole has a beautiful river. You're up on the side of a mountain. And then it literally has a cavern in the middle of the first hole that you could see down into. In fact, if you hit your golf ball in the cavern, you're allowed a free drop. But yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful fork.
But and these are all, I mean, so those more north, those first four regions, I mean, there's a lot of courses I already mentioned that I love. As you get further south, my resume gets thinner. A lot of these courses I have not played. Some of them I've never heard of.
I'm gonna change that.
Yeah. But I do have to go back. So I'm not going to ask you to drop names, but I'm curious. The golf courses they won't let you put in the magazine. Is this because they're not open to the public? Oh, they're just absolutely not. Like they're like backyard golf courses.
I've got to be very careful here. But one of the courses is owned by a gentleman that it's an 18-hole course on his private land, and the only people that play it are him and his best friends. That's it. I'll never play it. I'll never even get to actually see it.
I know there's a couple around. I don't know if this is because I don't even know if this would qualify because I know there's one in Middleburg. Like that.
Right.
That was, I'm forgetting the fan. I think it was the, who's the developer? Charles E. Smith. I think that his family owned it. And then there's one out in Maryland I know of and that I've taken some video out there.
And
but
it's interesting how many farms around here have a golf hole, like one hole. Like a
golfer that's cool.
That likes a farmer that likes the golf will have a lot of land. So I know a few different farmers that have one hole they've just made on their, right?
That's cool. Some of these courses that you're not allowed to share, have they gotten the opportunity to have you out to kind of like...
One of them invited me and let me play based on the fact that I would not share with anybody.
That's a nice trade. I'll keep it a secret if you let me play.
And it was one of the best days. And we had the most incredible fried chicken afterward. There's certain memories I wish I could share. Maybe someday I could. But right now, it's interesting. People are protecting... and I know why. I mean, it's a good reason, but there are some courses that I just simply can't share right now.
Sure. No, that's understandable. Wouldn't want you to. But tell us about a couple others. Like, so there's another one that there's an article on issue one, Ingleside. You talk about some haunted holes. Am I in the right place? It's an old resort. What's the story there?
All right.
I've never been there.
So Ingleside...
This is in Roanoke. Or
Stanton.
Oh, Stanton.
Yeah, I just played it 2 days ago. Brenda, by the way, thanks for getting me on. I showed up and they've already closed for the day, and they were very nice to let me, they recognized me from the article or something. For some reason, they let me on, and I had a blast. That's a course that will only be here for so long because everybody knows that land is for sale.
Sure.
And so eventually someone will buy and I'm sure develop that, and that's a sad story. I'd highly recommend people to get out there and play it now. Don't do what you did with Swannanoa and put it off too long.
Right.
Now, is it in good shape? Well, it's all relative. I mean, with the money they have, with the crew they have, they're doing a great job. But there's history there. And there's an interesting, it's an 18-hole out. They don't even make those anymore. Like that course is designed to be a premier course in the day, you know, when it originally started. And you can tell, even though it's not that way anymore, and it has the haunted hotel, and it has kind of a worn-out feel to it, there's also something special that you will not see in a new course. 200, 300-year-old trees, the 18 and out design, but also just the views, the way it plays. So I love to go to courses like that, knowing there's something unique or special that you won't ever see again.
Sure.
But there is a sadness to knowing, too, that there's only a certain amount of time that some of these courses will be there.
Is that, you know, in the Shenandoah, I mean, some of these courses are like resort courses. I mean, the Homestead and Massanutten and Bryce and some others that, you know, they get a lot of their play from, you know, people staying at their places and are not at risk of closing. But a lot of these other ones, that I imagine they don't get the foot traffic and the greens fees that you would in a more populated area.
Yeah.
Another one that I know that I did get to play that closed in the last couple of years, Vista Links, shut down. So, I mean, are many, do you think there's many more in here that are kind of at that risk?
Yes. Yeah. And COVID did a lot of terrible and negative things. But one positive thing that came out of COVID, I think, is more people golfing. It sure seems like it.
Oh, absolutely.
In the Shenandoah Valley, there's several forces that, if you would have asked me that question a few years ago, I would have thought were in trouble, and now they're packed. In fact, when I go, I drive up and down the valley from Harpers Ferry to Roanoke, and almost every course I go to has all the players they need, including this one. I noticed South here today that it's funny when I talk to Jonathan, the gentleman that does the marketing here at Cape and Springs. Oftentimes he's when I talk about golf, because he says we let our people that come here to stay golf, but we're not really big into promoting people from outside the golf.
That aren't staying here, right?
Although they'll let you sometimes. So get a call, you know, figure that out.
Sure.
But I think that golf in the valley is on the uptick or increasing, and it's exciting. If we go into a recession, if something bad happened in the economy, would that reverse? It might. But right now, I've got a feeling that golf is in a very good place. Do you feel that way too now, where you're at?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a common theme in almost every conversation I've had, is how golf has... the pandemic helped it do a 180.
Right.
They wanted to be outside. Yes. And then, honestly, I think social media has helped sustain it.
Yeah.
Golf is a very social media-friendly game because it's so visual, and as you've gotten, I think in part because of the pandemic and people getting outside and people playing it and introducing it to other people, you've gotten, you know, a lot of different cultures playing it. Younger folks, right. You know, people of color more than they used to. Playing it, and now it's introducing, you know, new generations and new groups of people, and now it's just like it's a rolling stone. It doesn't appear to be stopping anytime soon.
I totally agree. And by the way, just so I can admit this to everybody while we're talking, I don't like social media, or at least I didn't like social media. I never did Facebook. I never really was into that until what Alex just said, that I realized it's a really good vehicle for golf.
It is.
It just works perfect. And you mentioned it's because it's visual. I don't know what that means, but I think I know what that means. I hope it means that it's beautiful. It's something that you can capture in video and photography and in interviews. It's emotive, although it's also quantitative.
But it's also because every golf course looks different.
Yeah.
You know, baseball, football, tennis, maybe even less than tennis, but the playing field right. looks identical.
Right.
So there's only so many different ways you can, you know, take a picture of it. Whereas every golf course on the planet is different. And
not only is every golf course different from each other, it's different from itself. Like today when we play this fourth, it's going to be different than if we played it a couple months from now.
Right, totally.
It's going to look different. It's going to feel different.
Yeah.
And some holes are going to be harder or easier. There's something magical about golf that it's you and that course, and it changes every time you're there.
Yeah. I certainly encourage everyone to go to what's your website? Bo Birdie?
www.
We're not done, but I just want to, yeah. What's the website?
BoBirdie.com.
BoBirdie.com. Because there's, you know, especially if you're in the D.C. area, I mean, everyone's come out to the Shenandoah Valley for some reason or another, whether it's a weekend, whether it's to play a golf course, whether it's to go to a winery, whether it's to, you know, visit a national park, going canoeing, hitting a river, going to a resort, going skiing, whatever the different reason is. But your directories in here, the stories in here are just awesome. So you've got two issues so far. You've been doing this for a couple of years, like you said, on the website and, you know, digitally. The idea is that it's more active, more interchanging, and maybe this comes out once a year.
Yeah, there's other. So I have contributors now. I have several that actually write for National Golf Magazine that now are writing for us, which is interesting because you have to teach them or explain to them, man, what you want, because we don't really want what those other magazines were doing, although I noticed they're shifting too a little bit. But we're now in every single golf course in the Shenandoah Valley. We're in their pro shop. We're in, say, about 150 distribution points, including we're up in D.C., Maryland, North Carolina, Pennsylvania. We're in the West Virginia visitor centers and so forth. So we're getting out there. So it's kind of exciting.
How is it going? I mean, I think when we spoke on the phone the first time, and I had mentioned to you that, you know, it was giving serious thought to doing maybe not something similar, but something about golf in the D.C. area. And I've had a couple conversations over the last 6 months, you know, one with a gentleman who really knows golf PR, has been working it forever. And he was, you know, I don't want to say he talked me out of it, but he was basically trying to tell me that, you know, and again, they going back in 2024, advertisers, they don't want print. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so my question for you is, how's it going? How's it been? I mean, one thing I will say, you know, your first, we got to give your wife a shout out. Your first ad when you open the web on the website is Route 11 potato chips.
Yeah.
And your wife owns Route 11 potato chips?
She is the president of Route 11 chips. Hey, Sarah.
So I mean that's one advertiser. It's nice, but
So one good thing is for the last 20 years I worked in marketing and sales, so I have a lot of connections. So I've been blessed with a lot of friends that just feel sorry for me. So I pretty much got all the advertisers I need. But really our money and our revenue on is not going to be based on print. Print is almost frosting on the cake of something that especially the older golfers really like to touch, and the younger golfers. It's interesting. Print appeals to the two different demographics the most. One is older golfers, but the other is college age. And for different reasons. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, when college kids now, they want their music on a record album, right? You know, it's just for some reason they recognize how unique that is to be able to experience something while you're touching it, flipping pages. Now, also, people that read on a magazine read at a different speed and read the articles at a different length than on our website. So we try to capture all of that and try to get a feel for what people want. But this is the future.
Sure.
And if a Beltway Golfer becomes a magazine, my gut feeling is it will most likely be viewed, listened to, experienced probably with this more than any other vehicle. Because every person has a smartphone. And because you do podcasts, and because you're doing video, and because you're talking about doing print and so forth, you'll find that it's just continually finding your customers or your viewers, and they'll tell you how they want to, how they want that delivered.
Sure.
But you've got the information. I wouldn't surprise me at all if down the road that we partnership and connect and collaborate on other things, because your world is different than my world, but I know that some of our people go up there. Some of your people come down.
Sure, it's all connected.
There's a bridge somewhere. Yeah.
I am curious. I'd love to ask you some questions. This is just about kind of, you mentioned, you know, you've got a bunch of contributors when you look in the first couple pages, but I kind of want to ask you a couple questions about the, like, just the mechanics of putting together this magazine. In the first issue, I can't help but notice there's a couple folks with your same last name. But it seems to be, I mean, to get to, I get, I think more, a better way to put it is it seems to me that first issue, you know, this was all, it takes a village, and this is a family affair.
And this is very important what Alex has just brought up, because there's no way I could do Bo Birdie without the help of an enormous amount of people, of friends and family. And consultants and a web designer and a magazine designer that are brilliant. So it's funny, they asked me what I wanted on my bio, and I just said what I truly believe, which is my job is get the most talented people in a room and then leave the room. And that's really what occurs, whether it's a print magazine or whether it's the website or whether it's the social media pages or whether it's the events we're doing or anything we do. What I try to do is find the best people and then get out of their way and let them do their thing. My two sons, they're both have, well, Sarah, so wife and kids all have degrees in English and are so good at it. And in fact, my oldest son has a master's degree from the Writers Workshop in Iowa. That's like the number one ranked school in the world, I think, for writing. So. I'm blessed that I've got a lot of people that know what they're doing. Alex and I were fumbling with our, we both have like tripods and cameras and stuff, and we were complaining about the same problems because technology's hard and it keeps changing. And we're really wanting to tell stories. We really don't want to be cameramen or audio experts, but we know to a certain extent we have to be.
Right.
And so editing, we were complaining about editing videos and all that. So this is a long journey because when I talk about being the bottleneck, I really am. I mean, my sons and my wife and my friends and the advertisers, everybody else knows what they're doing. I'm the person that feels like they're back in college.
Sure.
I mean, what the heck is AI? What is an algorithm? How does social media even work? I'm going back to school. I'm literally going back to college, taking classes, working with the SBDC, the VTC, the SVTA. So I'm so fortunate to have a large circle of people that are supporting Bo Birdie and allowing it to take place.
What about, you know, again, as I don't know the numbers, but I'm sure the number of print magazines has gone down over the decades. Just like the printing, like finding a printer and distribution, like how is that process gone of finding first a printer and, like, you know, are you doing the designing and the layout of the magazine? And then I'll ask you about distribution afterwards.
Yeah, no, good questions. So first of all, I try to find the stories. And I usually do it the same way Alex is doing it, that I do it through connections, and then I try to capture it in an interview. Then I try to turn that interview into words. So there's computer programs that do that. Then I turn that over to my son or an editor, someone that kind of shapes it and makes it better. And then I do a lot of photography. The photography is one thing I enjoy. I love that visual part of it.
Sure.
And then I turn that all over to designer, and together we work on it and the printer. And so when you're printing, you guys probably already know this, it goes in pages of four. Like, so you're really limited by what the printer can do. Certain colors, like there was a color I wanted on the cover, they couldn't do it. I wanted to up just one page, can't do it. You got to jump by fours because of how the offset right. printer works, all that. So there's a whole world that you start learning about how printing works. You have to do a certain minimal to justify the run. And then you have to make sure that it's justified in how many people are going to purchase or subscribe to that magazine.
How many have you printed of each issue?
You know,
if you're willing to share.
Yeah, I don't like to share the numbers too much because I don't want people to get too caught up in that.
Yeah.
We had 30,000 views on our first issue. I know that.
Oh, wow.
Well, we calculated that with AI's help to figure out how many issues were read and how many were read more than once. And
yeah.
But a lot of our magazines are in pro shots where
right.
people every day, you'll get 5 or 10 reads off one print magazine that they're just leaving in the shop or in the bathroom. And then we're in a lot of doctor's offices and in car dealership. Like, we're a lot of places where the magazine just gets read. So one issue could easily get a couple hundred reads, a couple hundred
sure.
people.
Totally.
So we're definitely not printing 30,000 copies, but that's the number, I think, if I remember correctly, that we have on our media kit, that we had over 30,000 magazine reads.
I think I'm just asking because I was going through all these numbers as yeah. I was doing the research and trying to make it like, make the numbers make sense in my
yeah,
own head.
And it's going to be important to you. If you go print, you've got to kind of justify it, I'm sure. And you've got to kind of figure out what those numbers look like. My guess is because you're in a more populated area, it won't be as hard a transition of finding out, those numbers, making it work and getting advertisers. It's just a lot of time. The doing a print magazine definitely takes a lot of energy, time, and money. That's why right now we just purposely do the one per, so I can spend the rest of the time writing the stories, meeting the people, doing the interviews.
And are you yourself getting them out to these pro shops? Are you kind of, in my head, I'm guessing that you're combining, I didn't even ask this, what part of the valley do you live?
Harrisonburg.
You're in Harrisonburg, okay. So that's kind of right in the middle.
Yeah,
but so are you, you can drive, let's say you're going down to Stanton, and you deliver some magazines, but maybe there's also a story, bring the camera, so you can knock out several birds in one stone.
That's exactly what it is. So I'm distributing the magazine. I'm meeting the owners and managers and pros, building relationships, hopefully.
Are you doing all that yourself, though, the distribution of the magazines?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
To some degree, I've got some help. And then I'm also finding the best restaurants on that trip that are complimenting the course. And then I happen to play golf while I'm distributing. I meet people. The courses share stories they have. It's just a very organic kind of fun thing. Is it a good financial model? Probably not. But I'm retired, and it works well for me. But it's definitely a lot of fun. It's a lot of hard work and fun at the same time, which that's great in life when you can find those two things.
Absolutely. I love it. I mean, those sound like good days well spent.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And the people that I'm meeting and the opportunities, I could not imagine a better life right now. You know, it's funny, you meet people and you ask them how they're doing and they're saying, living the dream. And I always think that's code for my life sucks, but I'm going to stay positive. But now I get it. I'm living the dream, and I actually am living the dream.
Right.
But it's hard work. But it feels like I'm in the right place right now.
Yeah.
Right place for the right time.
That's awesome. Well, I think we've got a date out on the golf course here.
Yeah.
We're gonna play.
The weather's perfect. Nice breeze and
weather's perfect. I think we're even gonna have a little lunch. So I think we could probably wrap it up. But I just want to say I'm a big fan of the magazine. I've got both. These are both mine. I brought with me. I've read them both. Keep doing what you're doing. I think it's fantastic. I love the stories. Someone I follow on social media talks a lot about people and places, never things.
Right.
And I think you do a great job of that, focusing on the people and places of Shenandoah Valley as opposed to, reviewing golf clubs and this shaft and this, stuff. This is very much people and places.
I admit it's eclectic, but I think it fits a need for people. And I just want to thank Alex for letting me be a part of your podcast. I feel very, very honored. I don't feel I'm worthy or should be in it yet. I'd like to hopefully know in a few years that this is going to grow and grow and the numbers are going to to get there. But right now, I'm just learning. I feel like I'm kind of just stumbling along. But Alex, I'm very impressed with what you're doing, and I appreciate you letting me be here today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I don't have a good golf game, but I don't really care. I'm a regular dude living in D.C., and I want to know about D.C.-centric golf stuff. If you can tell me something that I don't already know, then that is great for me. I don't want the regular stuff. I want exciting stuff. I want different stuff. I want stuff I can't hear elsewhere. But I want it to be about D.C. golf.